Okay, good morning, everybody. Hope you had a good Pesach. It's been a mess getting together. We're up to Perek Tesvav in the Netzach Yisrael. Perek Tesvav in the Netzach Yisrael, he's in the middle, he's continuing with the discussion which he had in the last Perek. In the last parak, in Perek Yudalev, you may remember what he spoke about was what seems to be the excessive suffering that the Bnei Yisrael experience in this world. Why is it that we have things like Chazal tell us in different places, different contexts, that the Bnei Yisrael have this property that when they rise, they're higher than anybody; when they fall, they're lower than anybody. Why is it that the Bnei Yisrael should suffer so excessively and significantly within this world? And last time we learned a couple of approaches which he explained for why this was the case. And he says, to begin this parak, im ein dailucha b'tshuva zeis asher amarnu, if the explanations which we have given are not sufficient. Okay, let's just quickly review just two, I think, of the major points of what he had said, which were, the first one was that, you know, because the Bnei Yisrael are so much more is expected of them, their potential is so much greater, so therefore their failures are going to be reacted to that much more strongly. It's not only in the negative sense. He says they also have the ability to be greater than everybody else. It's not all negative, but there is the notion of tzadikim HaKadosh Baruch Hu medaktik imoim kichut hasara, that Hashem is perhaps extra careful and extra demanding of his more righteous ones. And that's one aspect of it. And the other aspect of it, which he said, was this very fascinating teaching, the idea that because the Bnei Yisrael are tzura, right, because Bnei Yisrael are considered so much by their form, by the shape which they take, so when they lose that proper shape, they don't exist. Something which is based more, right, if you have a ball of Play-Doh, you would say, whether the ball of Play-Doh is shaped into a flower or it's not shaped into a flower, the ball of Play-Doh is there. But when you mush it, it's not a flower anymore. Right? And the Bnei Yisrael are not just defined by just being there, by the lump called the Bnei Yisrael. If they were just defined by the lump called the Bnei Yisrael, so whether they're like this, whether they're like that, they're still around. But if Bnei Yisrael are defined by their refinement, so then when the refinement isn't there, they're non-existent in a certain sense. It's much more of a lack. Those were the basic ideas that the Maharal shared. But he says, if you're not satisfied with tshuva hazeis, ki me'achar shebi'arnu b'rayos bruyos ki Yisrael im ikar nivroim ba'elam hazeu b'shvilim nivra ha'elam, you look and you say, look, you know, we've already shown many times that the Bnei Yisrael are the main creatures in this world. The world was created for them. But nevertheless, these people for whom the world was created, who are the centerpiece of the world, we find that most of their lives, most of their history, is laden with tzaras and difficulties. How can that be? That just doesn't seem to jive. How could it be that the ones for whom the whole party is being made, so to speak, are least seemingly benefiting from it? So the Maharal, this entire perek, is really focused around one yisaid, one basic principle. The Maharal is going to use different, going to go different places, of course, to explain this principle. But the principle which he says is the simplest, most basic principle of them all, which you don't need the Maharal to know the basic principle. Listen to it. Chazal, with their faithful words, taught us hidden wisdom. This world is not particularly for the Jewish people. You're right. If this world was what the Bnei Yisrael were, so to speak, designed for, and it was designed for them, so then seeing the failure of the Jewish people to take advantage of this world would pose a major question. But the truth is that for the Bnei Yisrael, this world was not built. This is not really their place in this material world. The whole maila, the whole level of the Jewish people is their transcending gashmius, physicality. So how would this world indeed fit for them? This is the basic principle which he teaches, which he's going to expound upon, and we're going to spend time going where he's going, which are some very, very important places. It's not a principle without questions, you know, without issues that would arise with it, but this is the fundamental principle which he's distinguishing. He's saying, look, and this is also, again, it's a deeper understanding of the whole Olam Hazeh, Olam Haba dynamic. Right? Simply, of course, you know, very often when you get the question about why bad things happen to good people, so one of the classic elements of the answer is, well, now bad things are happening to those good people, but, as we say in Mizmar Shir L'Yom HaShabbos, wait and see. You know, in the end, in the world which really is eternal and which lasts forever, which will make this world look like tiddlywinks, right, there you'll see that the truth will prevail. And so we say, you know, look, you know, this is like a short-term view instead of a long-term view, and you're not seeing the entirety of the picture. And so, in a sense, you can give this answer here as well, on that level, and on that level alone, that yes, Bnei Yisrael have a lot of suffering in this world, but that's only in this world. There's a world to come, and in the world to come, what happens sets the balance completely correctly, and you'll see it happen there. But the Maharal's not just saying that. He's not just saying, you know, okay, you know, right now they're just getting a tiny salary, but you wait till the distributions, you know, then they're going to get big, big, big money. You know, that's not what the Maharal is saying alone. What the Maharal is saying is that this world is a physical world, and therefore the rewards of this world are not really suitable for the Bnei Yisrael. The Bnei Yisrael are sophisticates. The Bnei Yisrael have a tam, have a taste and an appreciation for things which are very, very much beyond this physical material world. And therefore, to have them experience their reward in this world would be lacking in a major, major sense. You know, the Ramban, Alatayra, Ramban in his Parshas Acharemos, right? I would say last week's Parsha, but it was several weeks ago, right? It was Shabbos HaGadol, right? So in Parshas Acharemos, the pasuk says these are the mitzvahs asher yasa isam ha'adam, that a person should do them v'chay b'hem, and live through them. So it's a pasuk which is a very well known pasuk, because indeed from that pasuk we learn that a person is not supposed to give up their life, by and large, for mitzvahs. You're supposed to do the mitzvahs and live through them. V'loi sheyomos b'hem, the Gemara says. So besides for the three cardinal sins, gilui arayos, shfichas damim, aveirah zarah, adultery, murder and idolatry, a person is supposed to make sure that they don't die in the performance of mitzvahs. Pikuach nefesh, concern for life, is daicha kol ha'tayra kula. It happens to be an interesting thing, a question to consider, that pasuk is said in introduction to the parsha of Arayas, which is one of those things where V'chai B'hem does not apply. But that's not for now. That's the classic drush of Chazal. The Ramban has a very different pshat in the pasuk, offers a very different pshat in the pasuk, complementary pshat in the pasuk. And what's that? He says these are the mitzvahs that a person will do and they will live through them, meaning that a person's definition of this is the life becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When a person does mitzvahs, and their orientation towards mitzvahs is, you know, I read in the Torah that a person who does mitzvahs, you know, they'll have wealth, and they'll have strength, and they'll have all these great things and prominence. They'll have rain and season, you know, and everything else. And they're doing the mitzvahs, which are meaningful, transcendent acts that are commanded by Hashem. But ultimately, what are they doing them for? They're doing for them for not so meaningful, not so transcendent things that they see as being the promise of the mitzvahs. Says the Ramban, if that's your world, then that's your reward. You define it for yourself. You know, this is what it's going to be. You can always, you know, the trick, the Rambam writes about, in the Pirush HaMishnayos, he writes about how we will motivate students, children, to learn. He says, you're going to have a little child, you say, you know, if you learn, I'll give you a candy. If you do this, right, then after a little while, the child, you know, grows out of the candy. So you have to say, you know, if you learn, I'll get you a nice pair of sneakers, you know, and then eventually, don't worry, we get to the car, Avi, right?
And
iPod, right? Then the car, right? Then, you know, then a lot of money, then honor, right? Eventually, you want the person to appreciate what it is for what it is. Now, it's a very delicate dance, because when you are going to be motivating a person constantly by material things, so then, while you may be getting them to learn, but sometimes you have to be careful, because you can retard their growth in appreciation of the transcendent things. If everything's always going to be translated into some material toy, so then are you really leaving enough of a window open in their mind, in their heart, in their sensitivities to the value of the matter itself? So the Ramban's commenting really on this continuum. And he says, you know, really, a person is going to be defined to the greatest degree by his interests, by his sensitivities. Im yeshes nafshechem, right, by Avram Avinu and the Bnei Ches, he says, if it will be with your nefesh. So what's nafshechem? Ritzoinchem, your desire, your interest. Right, Svarim write this idea that a person is going to be defined by what they're interested in, and the Ramban is saying an application of that idea, that if to you you would say to a particular person v'chaybem, this is the life, right? Life is X. Life is sitting by the side of the pool sipping a pina colada, right, out of a carved out coconut, right? So then that's heaven, right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and it's not going to be Alach HaRameh of Esrim, don't get me wrong, right? But if that's your description of what the desire of the reward of mitzvahs is, so then HaKadosh Baruch Hu will respond that way. Look, that's heaven for you. But if your heaven is something else, so then that's what it's supposed to be. That's what it's going to be. Now, Klal Yisrael, says the Maral over here, this is really his principle. For us, our life is not going to be defined by the material pleasures of this world. It's going to be defined by more subtle and more sublime levels of connection. And therefore, when we say, I don't understand, if this world was created for the Bnei Yisrael, so how could it be that Bnei Yisrael is so much deprived of that which has to be offered in this world? Says the Maharal, well, in fact, the material things that you see Bnei Yisrael so consistently deprived of, that's not really their thing. That's not really their thing. This world as it is, in fact, is not so much Chelek Yaakov. Now, we're going to go on to discuss this more. I just want to mention at the outset one, I think, very significant caveat to this, which is, which will play in, I think, a little bit to what he's teaching, to certainly the way we will follow through with some of what he's teaching. But, you know, if you would say, you know, the Bnei Yisrael, they don't have a lot of rib steaks in this world, right? Or they don't have a lot of, you know, terrific wines and things like that. So it's okay, shkoyach, you know, that's materialism. You know, like, they don't need that. How about the fact that for the bulk of our history, we've been separated from Eretz Yisrael, from the Beis HaMikdash? You know, that's not chocolate cream pie. That's not a material thing. It's maybe in a material world, but it's a spiritual connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So it's not just enough to say that, okay, we don't have these physical sensitivities, right? We don't have these great physical interests. We have higher interests, so therefore don't bother me. So I don't have this stuff. Big deal, right? I mean, I have the stuff which is really important to me. But the Beis HaMikdash is very, very important to us. So therefore, we have to go a step further. And let's understand that what the Maharal is speaking about here is not just an expression of the notion of Kedoshim Tiyu Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. of what we read about in yesterday's parsha, where a person's orientation, their interests, their desires are supposed to be sublime, you know, divine, the kinds of things that Hashem is interested in, we're supposed to be interested in. Right? Yes, that is going to be all true and all part of the picture. But we're talking about here more than that is, that in this world as it is, this is not our place. This is not our place. And therefore, while even in this world there would be situations which would be better for the Jewish people, but don't be surprised if we don't have that. Don't be surprised if we don't have Eretz Yisrael. Don't be surprised if we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, because in this world it's sort of expected that things won't go our way. Because Olam HaZeh is not so much ours. Now let's take a look. I mean, anytime, of course, you can always interject. In case you forgot about that over Yom Tov. Right, yes.
The rabbi mentioned yesterday, and I'm forgetting the Rambam, Maharal, the stone said, down there, we have three things. We have Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. I don't know how this fits in, because it doesn't say we get Olam Hazad, we don't get anything. We're not getting something here. We have,
It's exactly right. I mean, Eretz Yisrael is supposed to be the chelak haruchni, the spiritual world within this world. And many times we have been zeichet to it, many times we have not been zeichet to it. Olam haba, great kol Yisrael yesh lam chelak l'olam haba. In Eretz Yisrael, there were Jews who never had the privilege to touch Eretz Yisrael, to walk on the ground of Eretz Yisrael. Kol Yisrael yesh lam chelak l'olam haba. Every Jew has a portion of the world to come. Yes, there are those who, right, the Mishnah says chutz, right, the Mishnah says except for, right, but by and large, right, there were plenty of righteous Jews who never had a chance to set foot on Eretz Yisrael. There's no semblance of a righteous Jew who wouldn't have a chelak l'olam haba. And that's really very, very much part of what this idea that Maral is going to be advancing here. L'olam haba is the place where Klal Yisrael can expect, can claim to have its control. Olam HaZeh is not really always ours. Far from it. Now let's take a look at a couple of his illustrations. Very briefly, relatively speaking, the first one. But the ultimate one, which he's going to be talking about most, is going to be Yaakov and Esav. And that's what we're going to spend most of our time on. Most of our remaining time on. The Gemara in Yevamos, which he starts with, is a person who wants to join the Jewish people. Ger habolis gair. Aymim loy, we say to him, Ma ra'isa shabas alis gair. It's a fascinating exchange. What did you see that you chose to convert? Einat yedeya, don't you realize that the Jewish people nowadays are devuyim, sechufim, umetairafim? That the Bnei Yisrael are devuyim, they're downtrodden, they're sechufim, they're lowly, they're meturafim, they're torn from place to place. V'yisurim boyan aleim, all kinds of suffering comes upon them. The Imamar, and if he said, Yedeani, I realize that, Afal Pikein Eini Kedai, oh, would I only be worthy to join with them? Mekablam, I say, we accept him. And then, as we accept him, we tell him, Havi Yodea, no. Shailam Abba Ein Mesukan El Sadikim V'Yisrael, the world to come. Okay, we just told you about all the bad stuff in this world. The world to come is for the righteous and for the Jewish people. But in this world, we can't have too much good. We also can't have overwhelming bad. That's what the Gemara says. So the Maral says, look, I mean, why can't they have too much good? Right? Again, this is the same thing. Why can't they have too much good? Why do the Israel have to suffer? Why are we making this part of the condition of that which the Ger has to understand before he comes? So he says, because if we would be getting Rav Taiva, we'd be getting so much good in this world, we would become overwhelmingly part of this world. And the Bnei Yisrael are not supposed to be overwhelmingly part of this world. We're supposed to understand, we're supposed to be Kedoshim, we're supposed to be somehow, to some degree, beyond it. And therefore, because of our primary citizenship in Olam Haba, for us to get too comfortable in Olam HaZeh will make us very, very unfamiliar to the Olam Haba. And I want to just explain this a little bit. What is hell? How does it work? Okay, person goes after 120 years and they go through fires in order to be able to go to the Olam Haba. Like, what's exactly the what's happening there? So I want to give you the simplistic understanding of Gehenna. And I think it's the true understanding of Gehenna too, right? At least on some level. The thing is like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a person, Afar min Adama, dust from the earth, guf, and he blew into him a neshama. He blew into the person a neshama, a soul. And these two things will interact from the day that he is born, at least, maybe from before, certainly till the day that he dies. The guf and the neshama. Now, these are not two distinct, discrete things. The guf and the neshama, as we said, interact. They affect one another. They're supposed to affect one another. In the ideal world, in the world of Adam HaRishon, of course, the neshama was supposed to take over the guf. That's why Adam HaRishon shone like this bright light, brighter than the sun, because his neshama was visible in his guf. That's why Adam HaRishon was going to live forever, because his neshama is eternal, and therefore it took over his guf, and his guf became eternal, just like his neshama. They're not supposed to be distinct. They're not supposed to be discrete from each other. Of course, it can also work very much in the other direction, where the person's guf becomes so primary that guf finds its way into the neshama. The neshama, to some degree, not just that you say, okay, the guf is winning, and the neshama is sitting in a corner and not doing anything, but the neshama itself becomes physicalized. It develops new appreciations, new sensitivities, right? There's this classic, beautiful, magnificent mashal of the Dubin HaMagid, right, where this person hears about this faraway island where the roads are paved with diamonds, and he stops struggling to make a living, right? He tells his family he's going to go to this place, and he goes, and he gets off the boat, and indeed, there are diamonds all over the place, and he's rushing around, and he's stuffing his pockets filled with the diamonds, and he's so excited about what he's going to bring back, and people are looking at him like he's crazy, and they say, what are you doing? He says, diamonds, dust, blood, it's nothing. He says, you don't have any idea, you don't have any clue, right, what these things are worth, and they think that he's crazy. They have to wait, you know, 6 months till the next boat that's going to be able to take him back to his family. And he lives there in this community. And day after day, you know, right, he walks the street and you kick around diamonds. I mean, there's only so many that he can pick up. And he's kicking around the diamonds. And they're, you know, slowly but surely, he starts viewing diamonds as dust. He doesn't see it anymore as being anything special. That's just the way he now thinks. And 6 months comes, and it's time for him to go back. He gets off the boat back home, and his family, you know, expectantly greets him. And they say, "Ah, oh, you know, bring him back wealth." He says, "What do you need wealth for? Look, your roads are paved in dust. I mean, dust. It's unbelievable. It's great stuff. This dust that you have over here." Right? In the country, in the island where I came from, people had these beautiful platinum rings, and in the middle they had a clump of dust. He said, "What? You crazy? So we sent you there for the diamonds." Right? And suddenly he has a culture shock. He realizes, oh my gosh, you know, when I was there, I shifted thinking, and I started thinking that the diamonds were dust. So, you know, as the Zubin HaMagid, excuse me for making this thing, which is a beautiful, you know, drawn-out thing, he finds, you know, chveis in some nook in his pocket, he finds a diamond here, a diamond there, and he's able to give them something, but not nearly what he could have. And it's, you know, that's his mashal. The soul is sent from, you know, from the Olam Haba to find, you know, the precious gems, opportunities of mitzvahs which exist in this world they can bring back, right? But he comes to this world and people, you know, they know with all those opportunities they neglect them, they don't consider them to be worth anything, and they value other things. And slowly but surely a person starts thinking that way, and it's not just the brain but the neshama. So there, when a person comes to the Olam Haba, they need to go through a decompression chamber. that coming to Olam Haba, where the only appreciation that exists in that world is an appreciation of Ruchnius. There's no appreciation of Gashmius in that world. All the things which were so important and so valuable to that person in this world are completely and totally unimportant. They're unimportant in that world. So, you know, a person whose whole life is sensitivities were around, you know, good food, good drink, a nice view, a nice trip, a nice this, you know, a nice car, is going to come to Olam Haba, he's not going to have anybody to talk to. So the trick is, the person is supposed to have spiritual sensitivities in this world, so when they come to Olam Haba, they'll be like a fish being put back into the water. But inevitably, we will suffer certain withdrawal pains. When we talk about putting something through the fire, right? If you go and you go to the thrift shop, right, and you buy a pot, right, a beautiful, expensive pot, and you say, this is a great pot, and I want to be able to use it. So the problem is, I don't know its history. It's certainly not to be assumed to be kosher. So if you want to purge it of whatever it has inside of it, you have to give it libun. I mean, if it's a liquid pot, maybe you don't need libun, maybe you could do hagolah. Right? But the idea is heat in one form or another is there to pull out the foreign things, the foreign impurities from there. Gehenim is like the smoker, right, who stops smoking and gets the bends. It aches, it hurts. It hurts. The one who is so used to something, it's part of, right, addicted to something. So I think, person gets to Olam Haba, right? That first Shabbos, they'll be enjoying the wonderful radiance. They're going to be waiting for that cholent. And their neshama is going to growl because their neshama had a physicality to it. So the Gehenim that Chazal described, that a person headed to Olam Haba will have a period of difficulty, a period of painful, painful change in order to be able to get there, is to shed those interests, those connections, those things which, you know, which pull the soul in this world that are of no meaning in that world. Yeah.
The way I understood the shama is that it's tahareti, right? It comes in pure. And then I've always been told that the mashal is like a window, and then it gets like shmutz on it, gets covered up. But if you just clean off the window, then your shama is pure. And the way you're saying it now is your actual window is changing color in a way. So I'm just saying, what is the mashal?
I don't know to whatever it is, it takes it with it. In other words, it's, even if it's schmutz, but it's not schmutz which can't make it into the Olam Haba. It comes there. I would tend to believe that the neshama to some degree is going to be colored. It's going to absorb some of that dirt. But, you know, that's the transformation which the person has to experience. You can understand, therefore, by the way, why we understand as well that Yisurin, suffering in this world, is a substitute for that Gehenna. Because what happens with Yisurin, it's not just, okay, you know, Hashem needed to get him 50 pounds of pain, right? And if he got him those 50 pounds of pain in this world, then he won't have to get them in those 50 pounds of pain in the next world. Yisurin separate a person from investment in physicality. When a person, la'alein rachmon al-slan, suffers physically in this world, they start to disengage from being so invested in the physical pleasures of this world. They start to understand, you know, what's important, what's of value. It's a disengagement from the world of physicality. Okay. So, you know, this is the thing, the kind of the process which the Bnei Yisrael have to go through. So we say over here that if the Bnei Yisrael would get Raiv Taiva and Olam Hazeh, if Bnei Yisrael would be having all of their sensory pleasures, filled, satisfied in this world, we would get into it. And then we wouldn't be able to be these Eilam Habadika creatures, with Eilam Habadika, with transcendent appreciations. Because there exists, on a certain level, an inherent contradiction between those two things. Physicality and spirituality are not necessarily easy colleagues. They don't necessarily go together well. Kafi sheyarbe ha'oritz, excuse me, I'm not quoting it exactly right, but it's like the Chavis Halavis has a famous statement that the more that the land gets built up, the more that the physical world gets built up, the more the seichel, the more the mind, and he doesn't mean technology, he means the mind of the soul, the spiritual mind, the spiritual wisdom that those of you who were with us at the beginning of the Be'er HaGaila, we learned about so much right there in the Maral's introductions to the Be'er HaGaila, that falls, that there's an inverse relationship. And here I want to move on to the Yaakov and Esav issue, because that's very, very much the, you know, the point here. And there's a certain okay, to the Yaakov and Esav situation. Okay, and he brings in the process over here, he brings a whole number of other chazal. But where we will resume is a paragraph which begins with Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, which is on page Shin Samach in the Hartman edition and on page Pei Zayin in the classic edition. With Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, I mean, Michro Chayoim B'chayras Choli. When Yaakov and Esav were interacting about the B'chayra, so Yaakov said to Esav, sell Chayoim, as day, your B'chayra to me. What does that mean, sell as day? So Amru, they said, Shoyu Yaakov Esav b'me'i imam. When Yaakov and Esav were in their mother's womb, Omri Yaakov l'Esav. Yaakov said to Esav, Achi, my brother, Shnei olamos lefaneinu. There are two worlds ahead of us. Olam hazeh v'olam haba. What we call this world and the world to come. Olam hazeh yesh v'achilu ushtiyu u'masa u'mata. This world has eating and drinking, business, lisa isha l'hai l'banim u'banais, marriage, children. In the world to come, there's no eating, there's no drinking, there's no marriage, there's no business. So he says, look, let's make a deal. You take this world, and I will take the next. It should be chayim, meaning, like we talked about in that day, like when we were in our mother's womb. Miyad kofar Esav b'tchias ha-mesim. So Esav denied tchias ha-mesim, and he said, Hinei anoichi ha-lech lamus v'loma zeli b'chayra. Behold, I'm going to die. What do I need the b'chayra for? In other words, Esav said, this world comes to an end, and life comes to an end. He only saw himself as existing within this world. So he sold the b'chayra. Esav took this world, which would exist for a time, and Yaakov took the Eilam Haba, the Bechaira. Ukshebo Yaakov mibeis Lavan. And then when Yaakov was coming back from the house of Lavan, he saw Yaakov had a lot of children. He saw Yaakov had a lot of wealth. Omar la Yaakov achi lekacha martali shetit Eilam Haba v'Eilam Eilam Hazah. I don't understand, what are you doing? I thought you said I'm supposed to get this world. You were just going to get the next one. Where are you getting all this money from? Here, Esav bedatay. So Esav thought to himself, and he said, look, if Eilam Hazeh, which is not his portion, Hashem gave him so much of it, imagine what he's going to get in Eilam Haba. So Esav said, let's go together, right? Remember, that's what he said after he met Esav? So what do Chazal understand? So Esav, he says, you know what? You take some of this world, and I'll share it with you. And I'll take some of this next world and share it with you. Amar loy, so Yaakov said to him, Bonai rakim, v'ene michaylim lamay b'yisurim, shenemar udvakum yom echad. So Yaakov said, my children are young, they're soft, they're delicate, they will not be able to take the yisurim, the difficulties, so therefore, let's not. Right, now, what does that mean? Like he said, I can't push my children to keep up with you. Now that was what he said simply, the pshat in the pasuk. So what does this whole exchange, what does this whole exchange mean? Okay, so the Maral has an elaborate explanation of this. We will try to distill this to the essence. Yaakov and Esav were twins. Twins can be like one. They can be identical twins, where you took one being and you split it in two, so you have two of the same, right? Identical. I mean, they have the same, essentially the same DNA, the same hair color, the same eye color, the same everything. Okay, excuse me, any scientists in the room, if I'm speaking beyond my thing, but more or less, right? You know, the identical twins thing. It means they share everything. There's another way that that one could imagine these two beings, which are two halves of one whole, so to speak, sharing everything. Okay, let's talk about it in a crazy physical way. Lo aleinu rachmano litzlan, just as a way of being able to picture for the Olam Haba. Imagine that these two identical twins, exactly, it's one like one that gets split into, and one of them takes all the arms and the other one takes all the legs. One of them takes all of the eyes and the other one takes all of the ears. Between the two of them, you have a whole being. It was just split into. In a certain sense, Yaakov and Esav were like that. Because every human being, as we said, has this physicality and has this spirituality, has a guf and a neshama. Yaakov took the neshama and Esav took the guf. What does that mean? I mean, they both came out with a guf and they both seem to come out with a neshama. But Yaakov came out with the neshama, boom, superpowered. And Esav came out with the guf, superpowered. They didn't just come out that way, but they were inside that way. I remember we learned about that as well somewhere along the line, about their free choice. It's supposed to only start when the person is born. But on the other hand, you hear this, see this Zayru Rishoy Meirachem. You see that Esav from the womb, he was pining to go out to the houses of Avodah Zarah. Yaakov from the womb was pining to go out to the Beis HaMedrash. I thought there's no Yetzer Hara inside. There's no Yetzer Hara. But there is an inherent nature. And Esav had this nature of complete absorption in the world of the physical that drew him to everything which was connected to that. And Yaakov had this nature which was a complete absorption in the spiritual. So whereas normally we look at the person and the person is somewhere along the spectrum of a delicate balance, in the case of Yaakov and Esav, it was not a delicate balance. It was way out of whack. And that really, to the greatest sense, remains the case. Remains the case. Esav is supposed to be Megusham, Yaakov is supposed to be Ruchni. Now, that's the division of Olam Hazeh and Olam Haba. You take this world, I will take the next. The trick, however, here is, and so again, that's very much the Maharal's thesis, that the Bnei Yisrael, it's really, this world isn't theirs. This world is Esav's world. This world is not the world where the Bnei Yisrael will be expected to thrive. In fact, there are elements of this world where if we did thrive in this world, we would become disoriented when it would come to the world to come. We would lose our direction because it is Esav's world. However, there's only one problem. And what's that? Problem is that Yaakov tried to get the brachas of this world. Right? Rivka urged him to go and get the brachas of Yitin Lecha, the brachas of this material world as well at the same time. So it's not so simple to make this division and say that this division is a lechatchila. But this world can be a different world. And here, I think, you know, the things which may be bothering you, which you haven't spoken out so much, but the things which I think would be bothering anybody who reads this, there's a potential of this world, this Olam Hagashmi, this physical world, to be like the world which Adam HaRishon was made to occupy, like Gan Eden, which was a description of a physical world, but where the spiritual was so dominant within the physical world that it made the physical world something different. The physical world, like Adam HaRishon, shone forth with a bright light that would make the sun look pale in comparison. His body was that way. His body was nizdachich, was made more clear and bright. That is really a potential that exists in the world as a whole. when we speak about a notion of somehow sanctifying the physical, being mekadesh the gashmias, when we speak about the notion of building a Beis HaMikdash down here, taking gold and silver and copper and all the other precious and beautiful physical things and making them into a building where Hashem will come to rest, that there's an idea of ensconcing Hashem in the physical world. When we speak about Eretz Yisrael, where we say, oh, we can't wait to get to Eretz Yisrael, where we're going to eat of its fruit and enjoy of its material pleasures. Nechal mipriya v'nispa mituva. Right? V'nispa mituva. Right? What are we saying that for? Right? So, what do you mean? Moshe Rabbeinu. The Pasuk says about Moshe Rabbeinu that he looked at Eretz Yisrael, he wanted to go to Eretz Yisrael, so Chazal say, why do you want to go to Eretz Yisrael? He wanted to eat its fruit? He wanted to enjoy it? So, no, he wanted the mitzvahs. So we're going to make a bracha, we say, oh, we can't wait to get to Eretz Yisrael so we can eat of its fruit when the Gemara says it so derisively. Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want it. So yeah, about it. So the Bach explains, the Rishayim explain. Yeah, for Moshe Rabbeinu, who was not partaking of the physical world at all, right? So for him to say he wants to get to Eretz Yisrael to enjoy the physical pleasures of Eretz Yisrael didn't make any sense. But for us, what are we eating? We're eating here the fruits that were grown in Virginia, right? We're eating material, physical foods. So we dive into HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we should be able to go to Eretz Yisrael where the physicality is infused with spirituality. There's such a thing as being able to have that. And that's what Yaakov was trying to win over. That's what Rivka was trying to get Yaakov, more accurately, to try to win over. Because Yaakov for himself was so spiritualized that that wasn't necessarily his thing. As the Maharal explains, he gave him the red lentils. Esav, you take this. I'll take the Bechaira, which is Avedas Hashem. I'll take the Bechaira, which is representative of the second world, the Eilam Abba, right? Remember, what's the gematria of Bechair? 222, right? Beis 2, Chaf 20, Reish 200. It's always the second level, right? It's referring to the Eilam Abba. Yaakov was just interested in that, but Rivka said, whoa. We're going to let Esav take over this world. We're going to be beneath Esav all the time in this world. That would be a big loss. That would be a big loss. So Yaakov found his way. He would have this world, but only to the extent that this world wouldn't get the better of him. To the extent that Yaakov would be Mekadesh this world, he would be a spiritual being, bringing his spirituality to bear on the Olam HaGashmi, great. But as soon as Yaakov falls, as soon as the physical world is the physical world, not the spiritualized physical world, so then Yaakov can't be strong here. Then only Esav is going to be strong here. That's why Chazal say that there's no such thing. Ula'aymi la'aymi emotz. Either Yaakov is strong or Esav is strong. Loi nivne tzur ela mechurbanu yushal Yerushalayim. The build-up of the Esav's empire only comes from the ruins of Yerushalayim. It's impossible for both Esav and Yaakov to be strong simultaneously. Just like it's impossible for the body as a body and the soul as a soul to be strong simultaneously. When the soul is very, very strong, yeah, the body can have a strength, but it's a different kind of a strength. It's a spiritualized form within the physical world. Yaakov and Esav can't both be strong in this world, because if this world reflects the values of Yaakov Avinu, then Esav, pure materialism, has no place. And if this world reflects the value of Esav, Esav can be strong here. If pure materialism can be strong in this world, then Yaakov can't be strong here. It's a mutually exclusive kind of a thing. So the Maharal is explaining here that there was, to some degree, unfortunately, successfully made this division. That this world is not Gan Eden. If this world was Gan Eden, as it is right now, so then we wouldn't be able, indeed, to see the Bnei Yisrael suffering so much and lost to it. This world is the Olam Hazeh. And the Olam Hazeh, really, its level of of spirituality does fluctuate. Its natural condition is not that way. Its natural condition is as a physical world. And as a physical world, when the Bnei Yisrael are not going to be super, super strong transforming that and changing that, it should only be expected that the Bnei Yisrael will not be so strong. And we want to have Eretz Yisrael. We want to have a Beis HaMikdash, but that would represent the triumph of the Ruchnius over the Gashmius, which is the ultimate, ultimate goal. But we can't be fooled by the fact that in the interim we're not being so successful in this world, because that must mean that Klal Yisrael isn't central to this world. Yes, you can say at this time Klal Yisrael is not doing their job well enough in this world that this world would be home to them. So the difficulty that Klal Yisrael experiences in this world, as it is a world short of correction, is because in the quote-unquote, to a great degree, incurable condition of this world, that Lamaisa, it's a world of post-chet. It's a world which is affected by the sin of Adam Arishon, which was that which threw him out of Gan Eden, made the world much more of a physicalized place. In a world where Esav still exists, which means that to some degree Esav's hold in this world is going to be there, so then the Bnei Yisrael are going to be a little bit out of place in this world. And yeah, there will be times where we're going to be stronger and we will be able to see, even in this world, the thriving of the Bnei Yisrael. But by and large, our definition of success is going to be by where our personal orientation is supposed to be more comfortable, supposed to be more fitting, supposed to be more matching.
It seems that this idea doesn't exist prior to Yaakov and Esau. So Avram and Yitzchak would have the synthesis would have been complete then between Olam Haba and Olam Hazeh, but yet something happens at that point where you have to split off part of Olam Hazeh, so that even though Yaakov goes back through Rivka's instructions and gets some of it, right, but you have to split off some portion of it.
Okay, now you're right, there was not such a split in the case of Avram and Yitzchak, in the sense that there was just one Avram, right? But that really to some degree cuts both ways. Avram Avinu did have siblings as well. They were just much more beyond the pale, right? Terach and Haran, although they end up being very much a part of the story in terms of their daughters, Nachar and Haran, even though they end up being much more of the story in terms of their daughters, but in terms of the storyline themselves as people, they're much more outside of the story. Yishmael to Yitzchak, right, is in a certain sense more outside of the story than Yaakov and Esav, right? Ki be Yitzchak yikari l'chazara, right, rules out Yishmael completely. Be Yitzchak v'loi kol Yitzchak doesn't rule out Esav as strongly. That's what we see in the Gemara, that's what we see in the Rishonim, famous Tshuvas Harivosh. Esav is not as ruled out as Yishmael is. And the idea, to some degree, is that the way the Gemara says it is that Avram wasn't as pure as Yaakov, and Yitzchak wasn't as pure as Yaakov. Yaakov's purity, to some degree, indeed includes part of his breakoff. Avram was great, and Avram made possible, to some degree, in certain senses, Avram Avinu is supposed to be the picture of this synthesis. Avram Avinu was the one who was mesakein kol evarav shel adam. He brought the bris even to the organ which would represent the greatest distance from spirituality. But even that somehow was supposed to be included in the covenant, in the connection, in the relationship to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So to a certain degree, there is the synthesis, but to another degree, there isn't the ultimate purity. It's easier, to some degree, to synthesize without perfection. You necessarily are forced to synthesize when you don't have perfection, right? Yaakov Avinu was the one who was supposed to have somehow restored the image of Adam Arishon Kayem Achet to perfection. For him, therefore, synthesis becomes, to some degree, more of a difficult thing. So it's complex. It's not a simple, you know, there's not a simple formula. There's advantages to the synthesis, but the synthesis is what creates that Gehenna. You know, that's to some degree what creates that difficulty, if it's not a synthesis of clear conquest. Again, I mean, there's much, much to discuss about this, how, you know, whatever, like Yosef is supposed to somehow figure into this in bringing the purity of Yaakov to completely conquer the physical world in a way beyond that which Avraham Avinu did. But what I'm saying probably sounds like a bunch of gobbledygook because we don't have the breadth here to do this step by step. Yeah?
In a certain way, in the base of English, the menorah represented more spiritual side, and the shulchan with the bread, the more material side.
Yes.
So isn't there, how does this sort of, I mean, you spoke about it already, I mean, it's much more complex than we're just spiritual. There's this integration at some point, but is that also carried over here too in that way, or is there, or does that represent more like we have both?
We definitely, in the ultimate sense, want to have both. But in the here and now, it's very, very difficult to have both. Let me just give you an illustration of this, a very practical illustration. Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato in the Mesillas Yesharim, we're speaking about practical Avodas Hashem, the ladder towards practical success in Avodas Hashem. So Rav Chaim puts a very hard line on Precious. You know, there were different attitudes in the Rishonim, but it's about exactly this subject. I mean, Precious is the subject. Separating the person from the physical pleasures of this world. Is that a value or is that not a value? So the Ramchal, when he speaks about Precious, he says, you find Chazal which go this way, Chazal which go that way. Chazal would say that a Nazir is called a sinner because he deprives himself of even a luxury of wine in this world. How much more so a person who fasts? On the other hand, you find great praise for fasting. And the Ramchal's resolution of it seems to be as follows. Ramchal, as a practical matter, says you got to be very, very, a person should be parush. A person should try to the degree possible to separate themselves from material pleasures in this world. Why? Because the more we indulge in material pleasures in this world, even permitted ones, the more it becomes, we become connected to it. The more it becomes us. It's, you know, that's what we're interested in. We're feeding the habit. We're feeding the habit, and therefore we're growing it as part of a motivating factor within ourselves. And Kedoshim Tiyu, the mitzvah which we learned about yesterday, is the mitzvah for the person to somehow try to transcend those things, to rise above those things. And really, when he finishes the parak about Precious, he doesn't really answer the question about the Chazal in which speak about the positive value of benefiting from this world. In the beginning of the next chapter, he says, Chutz mehayomim sha'inek b'ha mitzvah, except for the days when pleasure in them is a mitzvah. Shabbos, Yom Tov, you're supposed to have pleasure from this world. So, the way I understand the Ramchal, especially when you put it together with what he writes in the Derech Hashem, and in other places, there's the practical difficulty in the world as it is, where physical involvement, you know, I don't know if I've told you, but like I say often, you know, this nice idea about sanctifying the physical, you know, like when you eat the chalent, you sanctify the physical. I'm very familiar with the idea. I can talk about it for hours if you want. But when it comes to sitting down to the chalent, I don't feel like I'm sanctifying the physical. I feel like I'm having a nice bowl of chalent. I feel like I'm, right, saturating the belly. You know, to actualize this idea is very, very, very difficult. It's a magnificent concept. Implementation is quite a challenge. So practically speaking, says the Ramchal, if we're going to grow ourselves spiritually, we have to realize that our indulgence in physicality does serve as a major, major counterweight to growing spiritually. But ultimately, we are supposed to be bringing the spirituality to bear upon the physical world. So there is a time when we say, okay, go ahead, indulge in the physical, because we'll make it a mitzvah. right? We're gonna bring it home. We're gonna do the b'chol derachecha da'eyu thing, you know, where everything you do is gonna be part of avodas Hashem. It's not easy to accomplish, and you may not even, in a certain sense, actually accomplish it purely. You'll be doing a mitzvah by next Shabbos, but at the same time, it may be a little bit of a setback for you because of the practicality. But there's still this ideal that we can't abandon. That Hashem, when He created this physical world, He wanted to fill it with His presence. You know, the great, great thing you could think about every time you say Kedusha on Shabbos or Yontif. Kevaydai Malei Olam. Hashem's presence fills the world. Everywhere. Everywhere. In this cup of tea, in the donuts, which are noticeably absent this morning. Right? In whatever, right? Kevaydai Malei Olam. And then his servants say, where is the place of his presence? I don't understand. Once upon a time, but then the world became a less hospitable place to the presence of Hashem. In Gan Eden, Hashem was walking the Ruach Hayayim. The next day, Adam HaRishon is in another world, where Kadosh Baruch went up 10 steps, 10 levels, very far removed, so to speak, where you don't see the presence of Hashem. Hashemayim, Shemayim, Hashem, Loretz Nasan Livnei Adam. Where are you going to find him? Chedesh Kadoshim, you know, you'll find a little Mekayim Kavayda, whatever it is, but Mistarim. So ideally, we want it to be here. And that was what Rivka was looking for. We're not going to abandon this world to Esav HaRasha. But on the other hand, we don't just have it naturally.
Yeah. Just on that exact note, whenever I read, when I read the Sefer Sharm, he says in the first chapter, actually, that there's three levels of man, basically, that man should be on. And the third level is the level that I think you're speaking of right now, Makadosh the physical. Basically, a person should reach that level. And then if you read the book, it seems like the first few chapters relate more to the, basically there's 3, 6, and 9, and they sort of relate to the different levels. So the exact thing you're speaking of, I've always struggled with, is if even in the middle levels, which we supposedly aren't evil, we're not zocha to going past the first three levels from what I've been told, what I've read. So we haven't even gotten to the level that people are able to separate, it seems like. Push. So how can a person integrate the fact that they're supposed to be Mekadosh in the physical, when we're still stuck down? I've always struggled with, what do you do with Mesil Shasharim when you learn it? No, I'm serious, I'm not trying to make it.
Yeah, no, it's
I mean, we still are Makadosh in the physical, right?
We're trying, but we're doing it with limited success. We're doing it with limited success, and the victories are not unambiguous victories. I think when a person sits down as Ma'aneg the Shabbos, they are doing a mitzvah and they are being Makadosh the physical. But at the same time, they may be drying themselves into the physical too a little bit. So it's not enough, you know, that's the world of confusion of good and evil that was created by the Chet of the Eitz Hadas. You know, in a pure, perfect world, we would do much better.
I don't know if we can get back to that based upon what I've learned, that state of Anushin Koranachet, that state of God, you know, God name. I mean, when I read Rambam talks about Yimas Mashiach, I'm not seeing a picture there of what things are like, where people are not struggling with their Yitzharas anymore, or where, you know, where
the Rambam certainly holds that way.
He does hold that way.
The Rambam certainly holds the way, I think, certainly holds the way you are, the way you are quoting him. It's not perfectly clear what his picture was of Adam HaRishon Kedem Acher either, though. Not perfectly clear.
But he explains in the
Mar Nevuchim in the first paragraph. Objectivity, right? Correct.
And that there's clarity, but so you're not clouded by the pulls of the.
Not clouded by it, but he also never really presents a picture of being able to somehow sanctify it. He does present a picture that you could make it into a mitzvah, but he doesn't present a picture of being able to spiritualize it. The Rambam, however, is a maverick in his perception of Olam Haba. Not necessarily in his perception of Yumais HaMashiach. There he has he's passing like Shmuel, one of two opinions in the Gemara. However, the mainstream opinion of Ramban, the Ravid, the Ramchal, and Hashkafas Yisrael, I think, is that the world of Tchias HaMesim, the world in which Tchias HaMesim will occur, will be like Gan Eden, like Adam Rishon Kayim Achet, in this world, where the physical is indeed able to be spiritualized. Ramban doesn't hold of that. The Rambam holds that Olam Haba is Olam HaNeshamos, is a world without any physicality whatsoever in any shape or form. The world of the souls, the world that already exists where Avram and Yitzchak is, that's the ultimate Olam Haba. Mashiach is when this world will be a better place. And Tchias HaMesim will take place, according to the Rambam, during the time of Mashiach. People will be brought back to life. They'll live for a while. Instead of having only experienced life in pogrom-ridden Poland, they'll be able to live in a time when the Jewish people are on top of the pile, and they'll be able to accomplish that much more, but they'll die again, and then they'll go to the Olam Haba.
But you have to admit that still sounds like a different dimension of existence. I mean, this is not...
Oh, it's different.
First of all, this is not going to happen tomorrow.
It won't happen without a significant change.
So I'll use this point out that this is kind of axiomatic. This is the way the way it's going to be.
Yeah, and that's and that's the mainstream opinion. Okay, the Rambam is not in this matter. The Rambam's opinion was not enshrined as the opinion of as the ultimate accepted opinion of Klal Yisrael. The Rambam got into a lot of trouble in his time for this opinion. This was one of the things that aroused the greatest objection to the Rambam. The Rambam had to even write a letter, the Igeres Tchias HaMesim, where people understood that he denied Tchias HaMesim altogether because of his rational approach to Yumais HaMashiach. The Rambam counts it, of course, as one of the 13 principles of faith, belief in Tchias HaMesim. So the Rambam wrote a letter, the Igeres Tchias HaMesim, where he defended and explained his position. But it certainly was not this kind of fundamental paradigm shift that we have here in Maral, Ramchal, Ramban, Ravid, Rama. Most Rishonim argued with the Rambam.
Is this what the Maral is saying, though? Is he saying that it really... I didn't read it.
By the way, I want to tell you, a lot of what we spoke about here is not in this chapter of the Maral.
I'm just wondering if he's saying... If he's giving something to strive for. If the Maral bringing down... Look, this is the way it is, and this is the why it is, and this is the way it's going to be for a while. And don't expect that there's going to be, or should we be saying, really, we can get there. Just a little more kavana over that.
No, the morale is certainly more like the first.
Yeah, he's not
sort of like the first. No, he's focusing that Olam Haba is ours, Olam Hazeh is theirs. So right now, that's the way it is, and that's that's the division the way he saw it, which in a certain sense maybe more akin.
Well, he's also history. He's playing what is and what was. So it's more shy up for him to be going, be looking back.
Right.
Actually, it works very well for going from 1600s certainly through 1945.
No, but
pretty accurate.
Saying this is the way it's going to be, too. And you almost say that he's saying it's axiomatic, but this is really the way it's going to be in the world.
Right.
It's always going to be like, he doesn't, at least now, he's never not talking.
Right. He's not countenancing a time of Tchias HaMesim, a time of countenancing a time of change.
I just want your opinion. We see in the world today that many Jews, whether they keep the Torah or not, are rise, and based on our numbers, they rise to the top of the physical world as far as governmental. The economy and
they basically control the world, you're saying.
But I'm just saying that in a way contradicts this idea that Yidden will not be on time. And that's really, I didn't know if I got a complete answer to what did Yaakov say back to Esau when he said, hey, you're not supposed to have the physical world. I mean, Yaakov has the physical world, and we suffer a lot. But Goyim suffered too. There's hundreds of millions of people were killed in the last century. But Yidden seem to rise to the top of the physical world too. We have some type of koach there as well. I don't understand.
the your question is a fundamental question. But you know what happens? I'll tell you what I think. I'm not quoting a moral. I'm not quoting anything. I'll just tell you what I think. I think that what happens is that to the extent that B'nai Yisrael rise to the top in the physical world without at the same time rising to the top in the spiritual world, we get the accusations that we control the world. In other words, if we were tzaddikim v'yesharim, you know, when let me give an example. There was a Jew named Rav David Zinsheim. Rav David Zinsheim was a member of the French Parliament, Napoleon's time. Right? There's now a shelf full of svarim, which are published from him. He was a Gadol b'Yisrael. He was a member of the Parliament. He did not arouse the anger that the Jews control the world. And even if technically you'll say, come on, you know, there were people in the time of the Spanish Inquisition, like the Abarbanel and others, who were prominent, and they were the objects of the anger of the Umasaila. But if the control of the Jewish world, the control of the world, that success in the world, was wedded absolutely to Klal Yisrael's greatness in the spiritual realm, there would be no objection. We are able to pilfer, to steal, to make for ourselves success in the physical world, separate from spirituality, and then we are put in our place. The pasuk says, "V'ro kolam yaretz kishem Hashem nikra alecha v'yaru mimecha." The nations of the world will see, wow, God is with these people, and they'll be afraid of you. So how could they get upset when they say that, what, the Jews control the world? Very simple. Because they don't see the same name of Hashem upon us. So they say, what are these people doing, controlling the economies of the world, controlling these positions of power, managing science? Who are they? They're interlopers. They don't belong here. And they're right. If it was wedded to Ruchnius, they would be wrong. So of course we can steal our way in. Klal Yisrael will be able to, you know, with our hold that we did get some promise of Yitam Lecha, allows us to be very, very successful in this world. But Esav will say, hold on, don't push me out of the way. And that's where the real risk is.
So it's almost like they can get it, but it's at a huge cost such that we'll never truly enjoy it, or it's not real.
It'll come back to bite us. La'alein Rachman al-Islam.
I keep thinking about Eliot Spitzer. I know it sounds like a horrible thing to bring up, but you see people rise to the top here, and then the physical world brings them down.
Could be. I don't know if that's what this is the illustration of, but this weekend, this Shabbos, speaking about Eretz Yisrael, and that's the great ambiguity. I'll probably mention this thing that, you know, I get this newspaper, this Jewish newspaper, and they had a symposium about the successes of Eretz Yisrael at 60, of Israel at 60. You get that newspaper? Did you read it? It's unbelievable. 7 essays. I didn't read all of them completely yet, but I read most of them, and I glanced through all of them. And the notion of rebuilding Torah is found in one of them as a despite. In other words, the success is democracy, the success is ingenuity, is economy, and so on. And I think in the one about economy, the fellow said, they were able to build such a thriving economy despite the tremendous amount of resources that had to be given to absorbing immigrants, and despite the tremendous amount of resources that go to rebuilding Torah after the Holocaust. When our definition of success is material success, we're in a very bad place, and we're completely misunderstanding the tremendous gift that HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given us of putting us back into Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael is Ruchni. So it's Ruchni, yeah, it's bringing Gashmias to Ruchnis and so on and so forth. But first and foremost, it's Ruchni. first and foremost, it's ruchni. So it's really, I mean, it's a tremendous responsibility of ours. I'm not saying, oh, yeah, so it's garbage, you know, no, farkert. We have to bring the gashmias to the ruchnias. Ruchnias to the gashmias.
Well, isn't that what Yosef, I'm sorry.
That was his job.
He's the paradigm for that.
That's correct. That's correct. But only because he was a child of Yaakov Avinu, who was pure ruchnias. Then he was able to bring it back. Okay, if you like.